Welcome back to the Daily Dots. Chase here with you. I'm going to be flying solo today. I got a few things. I'm going to hit the market stuff, and then I got basically just a few bullet points to run through. I'm going to hit on a few things pretty quickly. Probably won't be a super long one today. Markets got a little spicy today. The S&P was down a little over 1%. The NASDAQ was down 1.8%. Small caps down 1%. The Mag 7 was down 1.67. So the Qs actually beat the Mag 7. Equal weight was down about 0.5%. So equal weight kind of continues to look good versus the indexes, but still not a great day either. Volatility popped a bit with the spot VIX up about 7%. Front month futures there, a little less than 5. The dollar was flat. Yields may be the biggest story to me. On the front end, down about 5, but on the long end, down over 7 basis points. And part of that was we had some weak-ish data, but those were down before that. And the only thing I can think of, and maybe someone has a better story for this, but overnight, the Chinese government had their sort of like parliament introductory, basically the start of their parliament. And they always have a bit of a, you know, big financial discussion leading into that. And they had that last night, and it was pretty underwhelming. Kind of the classic last 5-6 years, China move of not doing enough to really stimulate growth was the broad takeaway. They're saying they're going to go after 5% growth, 3% inflation. They're in deflation right now. So the amount of work they have to do to get to 3% inflation is pretty huge. And I think that may have weighed on yields a little bit. We had no data yesterday, so really couldn't have been data. But noteworthy move lower in yields. They're kind of getting to some important levels where they either stop falling or it starts to look like a bit of a trend. Oil down about 0.75% on the day. Gold up about 0.5%. Every Mag 7 stock except for the Supreme Leader, NVIDIA, was red on the day. And NVIDIA was red most of the day, kind of last half hour took off. But Microsoft down almost 3%. Tesla almost 4, and Apple almost 3. So not a great day for those. Supermicro, the supreme leader of the small caps, was up about 1.5% on the day. That's it for the market part itself. And then I'll start knocking out some of the stuff I wanted to talk about. First and foremost, the S&P is the farthest above its 200-day moving average in almost 3 years, or at least it was going into today. And if you combine that with a lot of the sentiment and positioning data that's out there, like, it's just kind of clear we were stretched. So even if you're a mega bull, like, really the move today and the move this week shouldn't really concern you. I mean, it would be super healthy to have a 5% pullback here. That shouldn't really shake anyone's confidence if you're, you know, if you're an actual secular bull that believes in the earnings story and the soft landing, etc. Obviously, if that's not your view, then this might be the start of something. But so at the moment, everything's still above every important moving average and trend line, and nothing is actually broken yet. Other than, I would say, you know, Tesla and Apple, those two of the Mag 7s, well, you could maybe say 3 because Google has looked pretty rough lately. Those three just kind of look weak, and the Mag 7's done a lot of work to bring the indexes where they are. So you can argue that's going to be a major problem. But as long as we keep broadening out into industrials and financials and materials the way we have, I think you can actually have a leadership baton get passed here. But I also think we probably need more like a 10% correction than a 5% correction, but we'll see how that goes. I saw an interesting chart posted, and this came from the guys at 314 Research, showing the longest pause we've ever had and still had a soft landing was 7 months. And if the Fed does not cut in March, and they won't, barring, you know, a massive emergency in the next few days, that will be the longest pause you've ever had. So either you're going to have the new longest pause and still get a soft landing ever, or we're not getting a soft landing. Now, 6-8 months ago, I was ridiculing a soft landing, and now it looks infinitely more possible. So I'm not going to sit here and say it can't happen just because we had a 7-month pause. It can, but it is going to require the Fed to start cutting, even if it looks like they shouldn't. That I will say I have some confidence in. The S&P 500 is 21 times forward earnings. The last time it was 21 times forward earnings, we had 0% interest rates and a 15% of GDP deficit. Just wild to put it into that perspective. And it shows you how frothy we are. And if you really want to know how frothy we are, all you need to know is Norio Urbini has become bullish, which I can honestly say I didn't think was possible. Something I read about today that was a bit noteworthy, especially on a day where regional banks were up about 4% at last check. The regional banks that do have heavy books of commercial real estate, their bonds are starting to get hit pretty hard. I would say more than their equity, but that's kind of notable. It's something we talked about in our investment meeting today. Was the fact that you keep seeing things happen in the market, a big market reaction to things that was essentially like really well understood weeks, if not months ago, if not years ago. One of the things we talked about was Apple. It seemed like Apple took a hit today because of Chinese demand. Like, for anyone that's paid any modicum of attention to Apple as it pertains to Chinese demand, has known for many months that Chinese demand is and was going to be a problem. So the fact that maybe that's part of why it's having some issues now just is a bit odd. We talked about SoundHound before. I mean, we thankfully bought that, made some money, and got out. But that one's probably the poster child for this, because it went up because of the fact that NVIDIA invested in it and everyone thought that was like a new thing. In reality, that was a couple years old, not new, which means it had really no business going up as much as it did, but it held for days and days and days and kept going. And we've seen this with kind of multiple different things. So you can look at this with the regional banks, where, I mean, we know commercial real estate's a big problem. We know that, you know, the inverted yield curve is a big problem for regional banks. We know the credit growth coming out of banks has been, you know, pretty bad. We know how much these deposits are costing them, and the fact that that's a headwind. We know that their balance sheet is stuffed with pretty duration heavy assets that they've overpaid for on a mark to market basis. So like, nothing that all of a sudden is hitting these commercial real estate heavy regional banks is new, like not even close to being new. But yet all of a sudden it's filtering into these bond prices. Just something to keep an eye on, something to think about. And if that's a trend that continues, it really unleashes a just huge potential for active managers to find something that's kind of obvious, but the market doesn't care about. And then obviously maybe you don't like jump into it immediately, but you file it in the back of your head and wait for the price to care a little bit, and then, you know, jump. We did that with Apple. We got short Apple Friday, actually. And because the chart finally started to care, like the chart finally started to break down on what we consider to be, you know, a ton of headwinds, China being one of them, but just really the fact that they don't have much growth. And despite that, they've had significant PE expansion. But yeah, the headwinds in China are significant. So looking at all that, is we've viewed it as vulnerable for months and months, but you know, you sit back and you wait until the price agrees with you, and then you take action. And that's what we did with that. But point being, if we kind of continue to see this thing where everything you would want to know happens, and then you get a few weeks or months to kind of prepare for a move, and then all of a sudden everyone gloms onto the narrative that was obvious 6 months ago, like that, I hope that's the case, because that would be a great opportunity for us as active managers, as thinking investors, as dying a breed as that is. I want to talk a little bit about the data today. I mentioned it was kind of, you know, soft-ish or weak-ish. S&P services was strong. The PMI, problem is no one really cares about S&P PMIs. Same thing happened with manufacturing. It was strong, and then ISM was weak. So we had that today with services ISM coming in weaker than expected. And not only was the services ISM weaker than expected, but the employment piece of it, as well as the prices paid, kind of the inflation piece, those were below expectations. And I think that, you know, that kind of led to some of the weakness in bond yields on the day. But at the same time, business activity was up. New orders, not only was new orders up, but new orders was the highest since August. And I would always argue that new orders is the most important piece of these PMIs. That's how I view it personally. They do a breakdown of the number of industries within their survey that are, you know, going expanding or contracting. A couple months ago, we were at 8 of the 18 industries were growing, and now we're back up to 14. So, and that jumped a good bit this month. So to me, like, yes, the headline for ISM services was not great, but then I look at, you know, that breadth of industries growing, and I look at new orders putting in, you know, whatever that is, like a 9-month high, 10-month high, like that all tells me that services is basically fine. Something else I want to hit on was natural gas. That is something that we traded last year, and it did not go well. We thought the winter could be a little colder than it was, and it was not. We had one week that kind of did exactly what we were looking for to happen, but it was literally 1 week in the winter, which is just not even almost enough. The other part of that trade that we were looking for was producers to kind of have some discipline and lower their production. Price finally got so low that the producers have gotten serious. I looked at production today, and it was actually under 100 billion cubic feet a day, which is kind of a big milestone for them to be under that level. That's where you start to really impact inventories moving forward. And the natural gas price has responded to that. The UNL ETF is kind of had a pretty decent little recovery in the last couple of weeks, thanks to now numerous producers announcing significant cuts. This week was the big one. It was EQT, because they're the biggest producer, and they said, yeah, we're going to dial this back a lot. So that's notable to me. I still really, really love gas long-term. Something else we talked about in our meeting today was the insatiable power demand coming from the, not just the build out of data centers, but the kind of retooling of data centers for AI. AI is more, has more power consumption needs than your normal kind of just cloud-based, data services. So with that being said, as every one of these NVIDIA chips finds its way into the ecosystem, that's just that much more electricity that there are needs for. And we're not even touching on cryptocurrencies here, which obviously crypto mining requires a significant amount of electricity too. So you add those two, not to mention just the normal industrial build out and the normal population growth, you know, the normal demand for electricity that continues to rise, and you see really significant potential for a lot more electricity consumption, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10, however many years you want to look into the future. And that's going to require a lot of gas. We are building a lot of renewable power, and that will play a significant role in this. But, you know, if you have a data center that people are relying on as customers, you probably don't want it tied to how strong the wind's blowing or how bright the sun's shining. Battery tech has gotten better, but it's probably not good enough yet to like truly depend on that at the moment. So you're going to need more gas plants. You're going to need more nuclear plants. And that's one of the reasons that those are two areas we still like. The last thing I wanted to touch on was just the neutral rate of inflation. That is something that, and the neutral rate of interest, you can view it kind of either way, both ways. It's something that I think explains a lot of what's going on with the Fed and with markets right now, where the Fed thinks that rate, that kind of natural rate of where interest rates should be, where inflation is still hovering right around the same levels it was before the pandemic. I find that kind of preposterous. To me, it's clearly higher. And I think what we've seen in markets over the last year, it's kind of showing you that. It's showing you that the amount of liquidity we have right now is too much. And if that weren't the case, you wouldn't see, you know, what we just talked about with SoundHound being up on kind of a nonsensical view. Zach's going to be interviewing Le Shrub here soon. And I was just listening to an interview with him, and he had this great list of like just crazy stuff that's happened in the last few months. Kind of indicators he's watched for like, oh, we're getting real frothy now. And again, I would lead with Norio Rubini being bullish, but massive fundraising for, you know, the hot tech that's out, things like that. People trying to raise, you know, billions or trillions of dollars for semiconductors and for AI, things like that. And then things like SoundHound, things, you could argue, what's going on with Bitcoin, even gold in the last few days. Like, it just kind of shows you, there's probably too much liquidity out there. If you start talking about hikes and everything just comes unmoored and just flies higher, maybe that means that, you know, you don't need those, or excuse me, cuts. You don't need those cuts. The fact that 5.5 may not be as overly restrictive as you thought. I think there are signals in that, and I think they're important. And you can go back to the mid 90s. They were having these discussions mid to late 90s at the Fed, where you kind of got into this irrational exuberance phase where markets were really flying high, and they're looking at doing, you know, rate cuts or looking at how much they should raise rates along this period. And there were a few people at the Fed kind of saying, hey, like, I don't know, maybe the fact that all these markets are doing this suggests the neutral rate, the natural rate is a little higher than we think. I don't think we've had that discussion near enough this cycle. I think it needs to happen. At least one or two people at the Fed have at least taken notice of the fact that financial conditions have eased this much, that we have kind of a new exuberance that is taking place, but they haven't seemed to come to grips with the fact that what could be fueling it, and especially I would say what it may be starting to fuel itself, because as I keep arguing, you get those blow-offs in assets, they feed back into the economy, they make everyone rich, and much more so than they used to. And then when people feel rich, they go and spend more money. They go and expand their businesses. They take a lot of action in the real economy that adds to growth, that adds to wage pressures, that adds to inflationary pressures. So the Fed really needs to understand the danger and letting that feedback loop really kick off here. And with that, something I'm going to be watching in the March Fed meeting is going to be, so everyone here, I'm sure you've heard of the dot plot. One of the dots is actually the long run dot, which is like, hey, yeah, like we want to know what you think the policy rate will be, you know, in the next few months, the next couple of years, blah, blah, blah. But there's this dot for like, hey, where do you think the rate, you know, should be kind of like long term? And this bad boy's been stuck at 2.5 for a long, long time. And what I keep watching for is one day that dot is going to push itself higher. Even if the median dot doesn't, maybe a couple members of the committee pull their dot a little higher, kind of admitting like, I don't know, like maybe the natural rate of interest is actually pulling itself a little higher here. Maybe the natural rate of inflation is a little higher than we thought. And I think if inflation keeps accelerating the way it has in the last couple months, and there's no guarantee that it will, but if it keeps doing that, over say the next 2-3 months, and you get those 3 month, 6 month annualized inflation numbers back up 3-5 instead of down in the twos, then the Fed has to like actually come to grips with what I'm talking about. Cause right now they're not really paying any attention to it at all. That's just something I wanted to put out there. Something to watch for that March FOMC meeting that I don't think anyone's going to be paying attention to or talking about that could be very interesting and noteworthy. And I don't think, I don't think long bonds would appreciate it if that did happen, but I think it very well may. The last thing I'll leave you with is I'm launching my own podcast, TaylorMade Macro. I have a kind of a primer episode that's out now. You can find that, the little like 5 minute thing, just to let you know what it is and what it's going to be. I've recorded the first episode with my friend and mentor, Brent Johnson of Santiago Capital. And that one's, we're going to launch it, I think probably Friday. And if not, it will be next Friday. Just want to give you a heads up. If you haven't already found that, you can go to find it on any podcast app, TaylorMade Macro, and subscribe and get ready for what hopes to be a fun journey. And that podcast is going to go really deep on process stuff with really good investors. We're not going to talk about what we think the market's going to do in the next week or two. instead of trying to stay on top of markets like we do here on the Daily Dots, it's going to be more of trying to get to the bottom of them and trying to get to the bottom of the way people think instead of just what they think. But I'll leave you with that for today, and we'll be back tomorrow with more Dots. Have a good one, and you can always download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com. Cheers.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.